give them an experience. You just never know when it's going to be your last.
Hooking into the corner and gone over the tall left field corner, 347. And Bobby Witt Jr.'s third hit today is a three-run home run.
And Bobby Witt Jr. making it 10-1 with that swing of the bat on Sunday against the Rockies. And the Royals would go on to win by that final score of 10-1 over Colorado, salvaging the final game of that series to avoid a three-game sweep at the hands of the Rockies, who have been just struggling this year. But the Royals, again, a bit of a struggle on the road for them. Welcome into the Sports Ticket here on KD Country 94. It's brought to you by Keeber Brothers Automotive in Beloit. We'll talk more about the Royals and their win yesterday. They also have a good number of All-Stars that have been selected to this year's squad. The All-Star game will be next Tuesday, the 16th of July. And Home Run Derby will be Monday, and all that, Monday night activity will take place there on the 15th. And then the All-Star game on the 16th, we'll have more on that. We'll tell you all the All-Star starters for each team as well, as we have a little bit of an advanced format here, obviously, to be able to do that. Also, Wimbledon continuing on with the fourth round yesterday and an upset on the women's side. An update on the NBA free agency and trades that have happened in this offseason. And also some notes on the WNBA again. They're getting a lot of pub here in the WNBA and a lot of good things happening over the weekend for a couple rookies. So we'll talk about all that here on the Sports Ticket on KD Country 94. We can tell you that the K18 Twin Lakes League Tournament finished up on Friday in Beloit with the semifinals. Beloit Blue winning over Smith Center 9-6. Beloit Red beat Osborne County 14-6. And then in the third place game, Smith Center over Osborne County 19-9. And in the championship game, Beloit Red with a 12-0 shutout went over Beloit Blue. And all four of those teams advanced to the East Region Tournament, which will take place, I believe, later this week. I don't have the bracket yet for that, but that's the East Region Tournament in K18 baseball here this week. Get you up to date on what's going on locally there. Pee-wee district baseball beginning tonight, and we can tell you I think they have all the brackets. Yep, everything posted. District 1, Pike Valley, the number one seed. Concordia American Legion. This is in Concordia, by the way. Concordia American Legion taking on Belleville Lions at 6:30. Belleville Harslev against Bremen Gray at 8 o'clock. And actually, Bremen Gray had to forfeit, so Belleville Harslev moves on to the semis there at the Pee-wee State District Tournament. Top three teams from each district move on to the state tournament. Pee-wee District 2, the host is Beloit. Smith Center's the number one seed. The Beloit Storm Chasers, the four, against five-seed Rock Hills at 6:30 this evening. Osborne, the number three seed, against six-seed Wakanda at 8. And Concordia Knights are the number two seed there in District 2. District 3, Clifton Clyde is the top seed. Lynn takes on Valley Heights White at 6:30. Tonight in Lynn, it'll be actually held in Palmer. Lynn is the host. Concordia Lions, the three seed against six seed Southern Cloud at 8. Valley Heights Black has the number two seed there in the bottom side of that district bracket. And then the final bracket is hosted by Bremen. Hanover, the one seed. Washington against home at 6:30 tonight. Wymore against Bremen Green at 8. And Dillard Odell has the number two seed and a first round bye there in District 4. Kansas State Pee Wee Association is a place to look on Facebook to find all those brackets for district baseball getting underway here tonight. All right, we focus here at the start of the Sports Ticket on the Royals and Kansas City winning again 10-1 yesterday over the Rockies as they avoided a three-game sweep there to Colorado. Had a bit of a tough time getting the bats going in the first two games as they lost on Friday to the Rockies 4-2, and then Saturday they lost 3-1, and their lone run on Saturday came on a Vinny Pasquantino solo home run in the sixth inning, and then on Friday, again with just the two runs, Salvador Perez RBI in the first and a Garrett Hampson RBI in the fourth, the only runs the Royals were able to score. But they did turn things around on Sunday as they went 10-1. Avoiding the sweep, four in the top of the second with a three-run homer by Michael Garcia to highlight it. MJ Melendez out of the solo homer in the seventh to put the Royals up 5-0. The Rockies' lone run was in the bottom of the seventh, 5-1 deficit, and then two runs in the eighth on RBI from Michael Massey and Freddie Fermin. Bobby Witt Jr. with a three-run homer that you heard earlier in the top of the ninth to stretch it out for the nine-run win. Again, 10-1 the final. Brady Singer now 5-5 with the win as he pitched seven innings, allowed just one run on six hits with seven strikeouts. Singer, obviously with that 5-5 record, has had a bit of an up-and-down season. But again, had a good day yesterday and was able to kind of save the bullpen a bit. Angel Serpa and Chris Bubich, who's back from the disabled list or the injured list, and pitching for the first time this year. He pitched one inning and struck out two to finish things off there in the ninth. A good low-leverage, low-pressure situation there for Bubich to come in and finish things off. But again, just 86 pitches for Brady Singer as he struck out seven. Did have two walks, but gave up just the one run, as we mentioned. And the Royals' offense got going. Bobby Witt Jr. was 3-for-5 with three RBI and the three-run home run. Two runs scored as well. Salvador Perez went 2-for-5 with two runs scored and a couple RBI for Freddie Fermin in the game, as we mentioned, as the Royals got the bats going and their manager Matt Quatero on that.
Yeah, string a couple base hits together. Nice to get Salvi to get his 1,500th right there. No waiting around. And then Michael put a good at-bat together there because there were a couple good sliders before that. I don't know exactly where that one was, but for him to stay through that, pretty sure he wasn't trying to hit a home run, but a good swing on a pitch that has given him some trouble. And then to be able to expand, you know, it took a while, but MJ's homer and then the couple runs in the eighth and, Bobby's homer really put it out of reach. But, for the guys to get something to feel good going into this off day is a nice touch.
Yeah, obviously a big win there for the Royals. You don't want to get swept by the Rockies. They're 32-58. Coming into the series, they were just 18-26 at home. And now they're 20-27 at home. The Royals coming into the series were 17-23 on the road. And so they win just one of two. Their record on the road is now 18-25. They are 49-43 overall, though. The Rockies falling to 32-58. So, again, with the Royals picking up the loss, they are still at the moment in third place, and they've now lost an extra game there in the standings since we really last looked at it on the Sports Ticket. They're three games behind the Twins for second place. Minnesota's 51-39, and the Cleveland Guardians are still in first place. They're 5-5 in their last 10, but still six games ahead of the Twins in first at 56-32. Orioles have opened a three-game lead on the Yankees in the AL East at 57-33. The Yankees are 55-37, and the Red Sox are 49-40, a winning record there in the East. And in the AL West, the Mariners are 49-43, just two games ahead of the Astros, who are 46-44, giving an idea of how good the Central is when we weren't maybe expecting it to be quite this good. If the Royals were in the American League West, they would be tied for the lead in the division with the Mariners, who are 49-43. So it just kind of depends on what division you're in and who you're playing and how all that plays out. The Philadelphia Phillies at 58-32 still have the best record in baseball, eight games ahead of the Braves, who are 49-39. And then that's in the NL East. NL Central, Brewers are still in first place, 53-38, five ahead of the Cardinals, who are 47-42. Cardinals are the Royals' next opponent. More on that here in just a moment. And the Dodgers lead the NL West, 55-36, 7.5 ahead of the Padres, who are 49-45. As far as wild card standings are concerned right now, the Royals are a half a game behind the Red Sox for the last wild card spot. So they, if the playoffs started today, would be on the outside looking in again. Again, they've had a really good year, contrary to in relation to, I would say, what we expected from the Royals. They've obviously had a chance here where they were close to the lead in the division and obviously a firm wild card spot at times, but they've struggled a bit lately. They're 5-5 in the last 10, and really lately have been just kind of like a 500 team and maybe even below 500, depending on how they're playing, who's in the lineup, and things like that. So, again, the Royals are out of the wild card right now, but obviously a lot of time still left in the season at 49-43. There's still plenty of games, nearly 3 full months of the season still to go for the Royals. Again, they are off tonight. They'll start with the Cardinals on Tuesday, a quick two-game set at Busch Stadium. 6:45 on Tuesday night, Michael Wacha will face his former team. He's 5-6 with a 3.74 ERA against Andre Pallante of the Cardinals, who's 4-3 with a 4-flat ERA. Be an interesting couple games there. The I-70 series, the rivalry with the Cardinals and Royals. 6:45 in St. Louis on Tuesday night. Again, no game tonight for the Royals. The Royals did have a very good day yesterday, as not only did they get a win, but they also found out that four of their players have been selected to the All-Star game coming up here. The Midsummer Classic will take place in Arlington, Texas, coming up next Tuesday, the 16th of July. And the Royals, again, very well represented there with four All-Star selections. I was talking last week about this, and I really didn't anticipate the Royals getting more than three All-Stars, to be completely honest with you, and there were three obvious ones. Salvador Perez was high on the vote count, and it just kind of is a given. If he's performing at a very good level, he's probably going to be an All-Star, and Salvador Perez is an All-Star for the ninth time in his career. 1,500 hits he got to yesterday, as you heard manager Matt Cotero talk about. He's an All-Star. The other three guys are first-time All-Stars. Bobby Witt Jr. making his first All-Star appearance. He's the third Royal shortstop to be named an All-Star, first since Alcides Escobar in 2015. Fred Pottek was a three-time All-Star, 72, 76, and 78. Bobby Witt Jr.'s 49 extra base hits, including the one from Sunday, are already second most by any Royals player before the All-Star break, trailing Mike Sweeney's 56. Before the break in 2001, with one extra base hit in each of the next five games, what would become the just with one extra base hit in one of the next five games, he become just the sixth player to record at least 50 extra base hits and 20 steals before the All-Star break. Joining that's in Major League Baseball. That's not just in the Royals history. That's Bobby Bonds, Alfonso Soriano, Ian Kinsler, Mike Trout, and Jose Ramirez. So Bobby Witt Jr. obviously very deserving of being an All-Star. Seth Lugo's had an outstanding season as well, and expected him to be an All-Star also for the Royals. A 34-year-old, the first-time All-Star in his ninth Major League season, entered the day leading the majors in ERA at 2.21, 122 innings and quality starts with 15. 11 wins are tied for Chris Sale for the Major League lead. 7.86 win percentage, tied for third best in the majors. He's completed at least six innings in 17 of his 19 starts, the most such starts in the majors. And a bit of a surprise, I thought a commissioner's pick was Cole Reagans, who was selected by the commissioner's office. The other three were selected by the players. But Cole Reagans, 26-year-old opening day starter, is now an All-Star for the first time in his career. He's just 5-6 with a 3.28 ERA and 19 starts, has 134 strikeouts, third most in the majors. It was entering Sunday anyway. And so he's had a good season, but you know, with that record of 5-6, I think maybe I overlooked him. The ERA is fine at 3.20, obviously. 3.28, excuse me. That's a good enough ERA. It probably depends on the year, whether that's good enough to be an All-Star or not. This year it was. Voted by the commissioner's office to be an All-Star, Cole Reagans. Kansas City's four All-Star players here this year. Again, Salvador Perez, Bobby Witt Jr., Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans. Looking at Perez, he's hitting 276 with 14 homers and 55 RBI, and Bobby Witt Jr. sitting 324 with 15 homers, 61 RBI, and 22 stolen bases. He's got an OPS of 936 here this season. So, again, Bobby Witt Jr., very, very well rounded as a player and an obvious selection as an All-Star the way he's played here this year, and it's still wild to me that that kid is wrapped up until at least 2031 with the Royals on that contract that he signed in the offseason to stay in Kansas City. And it's wild, man. This guy, you're seeing a lot of the same type of stuff, obviously on a different scale because I don't think it's as big of a sport, but seeing that growth and progression of Bobby Witt Jr. as the star in Kansas City on the baseball side of things, and now you have Patrick Mahomes, the star in Kansas City on the football side of things, and you've got two faces for Kansas City sports for a lot of years to come, and that's what was so big about signing Witt to the long-term extension. And I still believe that Patrick Mahomes, who has a stake in the ownership of the Royals, had to have something to do with Bobby Witt Jr. Signing, whether that was just perception of what Bobby Witt Jr. saw Patrick Mahomes become here in Kansas City, or there in Kansas City. I'm, you know, 3.5-4 hours away, whatever it is. But the perception of what Bobby Witt Jr. saw and what how big you can become as a star in this in the city. And then also I would think that Patrick Mahomes had some chats with him, was in his ear and say, hey, let's do something special here in Kansas City for the next, you know, 7 to 10 years if we can, and have you can be the face of the baseball team, I can be the face of the football team, and the city can have a lot of success, and obviously part of that signing was to try to lure taxpayers into voting for the downtown stadium and things like that. It's still a big thing to try to get a stadium built somewhere, but obviously that vote didn't go through with the taxpayers in Jackson County. But, man, it's special to see Bobby Witt Jr. Locked up for this long, and obviously very special to see the season that he is having. And, yeah, it's big time. All-Star Bobby Witt Jr. has just had an outstanding season and well-deserved All-star selection for Bobby Witt Jr. I'm trying to pull up the full all-star selections. I don't want to do this by team. I'm trying to find out who all the all-star starters are. And I'm going to see if they have... Yeah, here we go. Elected starters for the American League. Catcher Adley Rutschman from the Orioles. First baseman Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from the Blue Jays. Jose Altuve from the Astros. The second baseman Jose Ramirez from the Guardians. The third baseman Orioles shortstop Gunnar Henderson. Aaron Judge of the Yankees. Juan Soto of the Yankees. And Stephen Kwan from the Guardians are the starting outfield. And the designated hitter is Yordan Alvarez from Houston. Again, reserves from the Royals. Catcher Salvador Perez and Bobby Witt Jr. an infielder. There are 32 total first-time All-Stars in this year's All-Star game. I don't have that the names right in front of me, but I did want to pass along that nugget because it's very interesting that there's that many first-time All-Stars here this year. It could be fun to see this All-Star game and just something different. Starting pitchers Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans are the Royals both selected as well. National League picks, William Contreras, the catcher from the Brewers. At first base, Phillies' Bryce Harper. The second baseman, Ketel Marte of the Diamondbacks. Alec Bohm of the Phillies. Third base, Trey Turner of the Phillies at shortstop. Outfielders are Christian Yelich of the Brewers, Jerickson Profar of the Padres, and Fernando Tatis Jr. of the Padres, and the designated hitter, Shohei Ohtani of the Dodgers as well. So those are the starters for the National League. Again, the All-Star game will be at Globe Life Field in Arlington on Tuesday, July 16th. So that's a look at the All-Star selections. Again, four Royals. Three of them were obvious choices, and I would have been stunned and shocked if they would not have gotten in. What I was kind of surprised about was the fourth, as Cole Reagans gets in along with Seth Lugo, Salvador Perez, and Bobby Witt Jr. All-Star game again coming up next Tuesday, July 16th. The Royals have baseball this week. They'll play through Sunday, and then they'll have the All-Star break and have a little time off for everybody that didn't make the All-Star game. You know, Bobby Witt Jr., I think, has played in every game this year, so some of them are like, some people are like, well, it'd be nice for him to get the break. Listen, I don't think Bobby Witt Jr. is worried about getting a break at this time of his career and at this time of the year, as he is just 24. It's not like he's an older guy that needs the rest. And besides, he'll get some rest on Monday, and then he'll play the game Tuesday, and then I think Wednesday, Thursday will be off. So he'll still get a little bit of a breather. He's not, listen, All-Star game is not as taxing on a body as the rest of it, and I'm going to guarantee you he's happy to go home for the All-Star game and play this in Arlington. His first ever All-Star game is in Arlington, Texas. He's from the Dallas area and has a chance to do that, showcase it in front of his hometown family and friends and everything like that. There's absolutely no reason that he would even want to think about taking some time off with this being his first ever All-Star game. So I think it's just funny when people say some of those things that, yo, Bobby Witt Jr. is not like, he's not old. He is well versed in how to keep his body in tune to play baseball. Listen, there's a possibility for everybody to get injured. I'm going to knock on wood that it's not Bobby Witt Jr., but, and you know, you get tired, fine, things happen, but, you know, I wouldn't be overly worried about trying to get a break because he's played in all 92 games this year. It's just not a big deal in my eyes. 70 games left. You know, I have a little bit of a break here. And then play in the All-Star game, get a couple more days off. I know you're traveling on those days, but you're not taxing yourself as far as actual physical exertion and things like that. Sure, it's probably tired on the body, but there's no jet lag. You're going south. You're staying in the same time zone. Everything is fit perfect for Bobby Witt Jr. to play in this All-Star game. So it's just like some things you read on social media. And it's like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand where you're going with this. And that's definitely one of them. Yeah. Been nice to see Bobby Witt Jr. get a chance to get a rest and sit out since he's played in all the games this year. He's a baseball player. He wants to play in all the games. He's 24 years old. What do you expect from him? If the manager wants him to play, he's going to be all about playing. There's not a chance that he's just going to be like, hey, I need a day off today. Anybody gets that kind of vibe from Bobby Witt Jr., not watching the Royals or just looking at stats and seeing if they're winning or losing. Bobby Witt Jr. gives everything all the time and wants to be out on the field and definitely wants to be playing in the All-Star game in his hometown, where he's from, and in front of those fans, like I mentioned. So, All-Star game again next Tuesday, July 16th. Four Royals in the game, more at MLB.com if you'd like to look over the rosters. The sports ticket brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive and Beloit. We're back in 30 seconds with more. We'll talk about Wimbledon, the NBA, WNBA as well, all coming up here on the sports ticket.
I'm Elijah at Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Hot weather is here. Is the air conditioning in your vehicle nice and cold? If not, we can help. We have the training and equipment to service vehicle AC systems of all types, including the new refrigerant and late model vehicles. We offer same-day service on air conditioning with no appointment necessary. So don't sweat it out. Give us a shout. Fast, friendly service for your air conditioner can be found at Kiefer Brothers Automotive, just south of the courthouse in Beloit, or on the web at KieferBrothers.com.
All right, Dusty Donis back in with you here on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit. Not a lot going on as far as the sporting world is concerned in the NBA from when we last talked. We talked on Friday about free agency and some of the moves that were made. Franz Wagner did agree to a five-year, $224 million maximum rookie contract on Friday afternoon. Really kind of left you with the Buddy Hield Golden State Warriors situation, where he was part of a sign-and-trade deal going to the Warriors, 2 years, $21 million. And then the 4th of July, and that was really the only thing that happened on the 4th of July. The 5th of July, there was a few things. Then on Saturday, things picked up a little bit more. Malik Beasley signed a one-year deal with the Pistons worth more than $6 million. Also, Caleb Martin, a four-year deal with the 76ers worth $32 million. The Spurs are trading former Kansas guard Devontae Graham and a second-round pick to the Charlotte Hornets as let's see what we got here. I don't know what the Spurs got back on that deal. It doesn't really say. The Hornets will waive Devontae Graham and allow him to become a free agent, but I don't know. It doesn't really say what the Spurs got back there. This is the reason that I don't like using. I like it because it's all in one spot, the site that I use for this. But man, they just don't always put the details of the trades in there. Miles Bridges has agreed to a 3-year, $75 million deal to return to the Charlotte Hornets as well. And the bigger news over the weekend, the Sacramento Kings have agreed on a sign-and-trade deal that will land DeMar DeRozan on a 3-year, $74 million contract. The deal will also send Harrison Barnes to the Spurs and Chris Duarte, two second-round picks and cash to the Chicago Bulls. It's a trade that the Kings are looking to bolster their team a little bit with DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan averaged 24 points, 4.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists last year with the Bulls. And then, you know, obviously the other name that people are going to really know in that is Harrison Barnes. Played for the Kings last year, averages 12 points, 3 rebounds, and an assist. But has been part of the Warriors in the past. He's been on some teams that where he's been a pretty good role player for him. So I'm not disappointed at all as a Spurs fan of getting Harrison Barnes to kind of add to the veteran leadership of this team that's already added Chris Paul on a free agent deal. So, again, it's awesome to see my favorite team getting some guys that can at least help with the development of Victor Wembanyama there for the Spurs. So, again, not a lot going on right now. As I mentioned on Friday, a lot of what happens in the free agency period happens pretty quickly out of the gate. And then you move on. You find these kind of deals where DeMar DeRozan gets traded, you know, 5-6 days after this whole thing begins. And so that's kind of an update on what's going on in NBA offseason. Just not a lot right now, but they continue to move and make moves, and it'll be interesting to see how things go with the NBA and the offseason there. NBA Summer League is also underway as Bronny James made his debut on Saturday. He went 2-for-9, had 4 points. I think 0-for-3 from three-point land. Missed a couple free throws. The Kings beat the Lakers. The Kings team number two beat the Lakers 108-94. And, yeah, it'd be interesting to follow Bronny James because, yeah, he went 2-for-9, 0-for-3 from three, 0-for-2 at the free throw line. Had a couple assists, couple rebounds, 4 points. He starts on that summer league team. Observations from the little bit of highlights that I saw. He does have explosiveness. He is his dad's kid. He's athletic. He has explosiveness. He had a nice take to the basket on one of his shots that he got, and a nice pull-up jumper for his other shot. But he got to work on the three-point shot in the NBA. I'm going to tell you that right now. He was leaving a lot of them shots short. And obviously, it's his first game in rookie league. I'm not going to like judge him as an NBA player off of one game. One, because we always say the competition's not going to be as nearly as good as what he's going to see in the actual NBA. And two, hey, this is what summer league is for. You're developing, you're learning, you're trying to figure out, you know, the differences in in-game action of the three-point line, of some of the rules that are a little bit different maybe in the NBA than college. I wouldn't say different rules, but I'd say administered differently. So you got to learn all that, and you work on that. That's what this time is for. 100% is what it's for. So Bronny James with 4 points in his summer league debut. Obviously, whether we want to or not, we're going to be following Bronny James. In that moment that he steps on the court with the Lakers, which he will, and I think it'll be, I wouldn't be surprised if Bronny James makes the team on opening night. He gets this out of the way. LeBron and Bronny play on the same court at the same time. And then you work it out. Probably doesn't play a lot for the Lakers this year. Maybe plays in the G League. But I would not be surprised to see Bronny James out there. Probably not starting, but out there on the court with his dad at the same time on opening night of the 2024-25 season. Maybe I'll be wrong about that, but that would be my prediction, that the Lakers are going to go ahead and let him stay on the roster for that point in time, and then you kind of move on from that part and see if indeed he is good enough to play with the Lakers on the actual team instead of going to the G League and actually getting a chance to go ahead and play in those games. So, again, the Lakers losing the first game, and then they did play yesterday as well. And let's see, Bronny yesterday did not play. So he's already resting in summer league ball. Interesting. I don't know why you don't play him. Like, see everything you wanted to see already in the first game, so you're just going to rest him? It doesn't make any sense to me. I know there's a lot of guys on these rosters, and they want to get everybody playing time, and they want to get them in the spots that they need to be and try to give them a shot to make the NBA. But I don't know. If I'm coaching, I think I'd have Bronny James playing in every game that I could here in summer league just to get them to learn the game. But, again, I'm not the coach. I'm not going to be the one that makes those decisions for anybody, the Lakers, the Spurs, the Kings, whoever it may be. I'm not the one making the decisions. So, yeah, that's that. Summer league underway in the NBA. All right, WNBA, there was some news over the weekend there as well, and a couple historic things that happened over the weekend. Caitlin Clark racked up the first ever triple-double by a WNBA rookie on Saturday in the Fever's 83-78 win over the New York Liberty, who are in first place right now in the standings in the WNBA. She pulled down her 10th rebound, Clark did, at the 7:07 mark of the fourth quarter, giving her the triple-double. She finished the game with 19 points, a season-high tying 13 assists and 12 rebounds. And the 22nd game of her WNBA career. Everybody likes numbers. She wears number 22, so she got the triple-double in her 22nd game. Clark, obviously, talking in the postgame, said, "It's obviously cool. My teammates have been finishing the ball at a really high rate. My assist numbers, that's because of them." And Aaliyah Boston's like, she's so humble, right? And so, yeah, Caitlin Clark, the first ever triple-double by a WNBA rookie. And listen, there's a lot of people that are talking about, you know, rookie of the year, obviously, and Caitlin Clark will be in that discussion. But as much as some people may not like her, or as much as some people just, I'm not her biggest fan in the world, but if I'm voting right now, Angel Reese is the rookie of the year. She made WNBA history Sunday when she recorded her 13th consecutive double-double. That is a new league record for anybody. Anybody. She passed Candace Parker, who she was tied with, who had 12 consecutive double-doubles from the 2009 and 2010 seasons. So this is the first time this has actually happened during one season. And again, it is Angel Reese who, in my mind right now, should be the WNBA Rookie of the Year. Again, her 13th consecutive double-double That's a record all time in the WNBA. Again, not just rookies, but every single player, with 17 points and 14 rebounds. And her team's 84-71 loss to the Storm on Sunday, she set that record, 13 consecutive double-doubles. She surpassed the WNBA's previous record of 12, again, set by Candace Parker. She said, "I'm just trying to be consistent for my teammates, doing whatever I can to help my team. I think I didn't do enough tonight, but just being able to be there for my teammates and knowing that I have a job to do every day, no matter if I'm a rookie or a vet." And Teresa Weatherspoon, the first-year head coach, said, "It's absolutely amazing to see. She might be surprising herself, but she's not surprising me." Angel Reese, 13 consecutive double-doubles for the Chicago Sky. She's just been outstanding here this season. And against the Storm on Friday, she had 27 points and 10 rebounds. She had 12 and 19 against Atlanta on the 2nd of February. 27 points, by the way, was a career high there on Friday. She also had a 25-point, 16-rebound game against the Fever in an 88-87 win on June 23rd as part of this deal, and 20 and 10 against the Connecticut Sun on June 12th. So, yeah, she's not only is she getting the double-doubles, you know, when this thing started, it was 13 and 10, 16 and 11, 13 and 13, so the scoring numbers weren't, like, blown out of the water or anything like that. But she's had games of 20, 25, 18 and 27 and 17 last night as well. So the scoring numbers are picking up. Angel Reese is averaging 14 points and 12 rebounds so far this season. And again, I don't know why. You know, I think popularity wise, Caitlin Clark's going to get some votes that just because of who she is and what she does, it'll take away from Angel Reese. Caitlin Clark is averaging 16 points, 6 rebounds, 7.5 assists. So the assist numbers are helping Caitlin Clark as well. You know, the turnover numbers are not helping her. She's still averaging 5.5 turnovers a game. So I think combined with her popularity, but also combined with the turnovers that she has, she may lose some votes because she's not as crisp and playing maybe as well as she could be at this moment in time. But I don't know. I'm leaning. I'm not saying that it's set in stone because there's still games left, but I'm leaning toward Angel Reese being the WNBA Rookie of the Year. It's still wild to me that we're talking about WNBA basketball on the Sports Ticket, but, man, this is all over social media. People are talking about it on Twitter or X, and there's a lot of stuff on Facebook, too, that is very interesting when you kind of read the comments and what some people are saying. And also what people don't know is that Asia Wilson is still the best player in the world, and she's been just outstanding. She became the leader in points in Aces franchise history, set the scoring record there. She had 28 points, became a franchise all-time leading scorer in the win over the Wings, Dallas Wings, 104-85. And she also grabbed 10 rebounds for her 11th double-double of the season, 11 of 22 from the floor. Just an outstanding day from Asia Wilson. And she's averaging 27 points and 11 rebounds, 2.5 assists. There's no question who the MVP of the WNBA is this year. It's a lock right now. Asia Wilson would have to just be terrible the rest of the season to not get it. 28 and 10, 104-85 win. You know, the Aces started the season 4-1, 6-2. Then they lost 4 out of 5. So they were 7-6 at one point. But since then, they have won 7 of the last 8. So they're playing very well, and Asia Wilson is a major part of that. She's had 30-point games. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 30-point games. She's been in double figures in every single game this year and has scored less than 20 only twice. 11 against the Washington Mystics on June 29th. And 18 against the Mystics on July 4th. Apparently the Mystics have something on Asia Wilson that they can hold her under 20 points because nobody else in the league can. And her rebound numbers are off the chart. She's getting high numbers of rebounds. You know, she's been off of a double-double, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So she has 11 double-doubles, and 6 other times she had double figures and 9 rebounds. She very easily could have 17 double-doubles, and she could be the one that has that record instead of Angel Reese, but missed the rebound by 1 6 times. So Asia Wilson, again, the all-time leading scorer in Vegas Aces franchise history. And if you're saying, oh, well, they haven't been a franchise that long, This franchise dates back, I believe, to the Utah Stars, if I'm not mistaken. I would have to look all that up and double check, but that's, I think, 27 years worth of history. So, yeah, it's. I know people are going to be like, oh, well, that's not that impressive. The Vegas Aces haven't been around that long. Well, just think about, just like a lot of other sports, right? Teams fail and, well, I don't say fail, but they don't have the success and maybe the attendance and everything that they might want. And then they go other places. This franchise started in 1997 in Utah. They moved in 2003 to San Antonio. They were Silver Stars and then the San Antonio Stars from 14 to 17. And they've been in Vegas since 2018. And so has Asia Wilson. She's been in Vegas since 2018 as well. So, franchise history dates back to 1997. If you're wondering about that and how much the franchise scoring record actually means, it means a lot. Asia Wilson is the best player in the WNBA right now, and it's not particularly close. All right, we're going to wrap the sports ticket here with an update on Wimbledon. So we'll give you the update on the scores here. The fourth round yesterday, there was an upset that we in this country probably didn't like to see. I mean, depends on if you're an Emma Navarro fan, because she's also from the United States. But the 19-seeded Navarro won over Coco Gauff in straight sets, 6-4, 6-3, to move on. And then Madison Keys, the 12-seed from America, losing to Jasmine Paolini, the Italian, 6-3, 6-7, 5-5. Keys had to retire with an injury in the third set, and Paolini moves on. Lulu Sun and Donna Vekic are both advancing to the round of 16, or the quarterfinals, I believe, actually, at Wimbledon. Round 4 is underway today. Yeah, it'll be the quarterfinals that will be next. But round 4 on the women's side today, Elena Rybakina won by retirement from Anna Kalinskaya, as Rybakina, the 4 seed, moves on with a 6-3-3-0 win, and Lena Spitalina winning 6-2-6-1 to move on to the quarterfinals on the women's side. Danielle Collins, the 11 seed, takes on Barbara Krejcikova at 10:30 this morning on the women's side in singles action. Moving over to the men's side, as we had yesterday, Ben Shelton, the 14th-seeded American, losing to the top-seed Yannick Sinner, 6-2, 6-4, 7-6. Carlos Alcaraz, a 4-set win over Hugo Humbert, the 16th-seed. Alcaraz, a 3-seed. And 10th-seed Grigor Dimitrov had to retire in the first set, 5-3, against Daniil Medvedev, the 5-seed. And Tommy Paul, the 12th-seeded American, moves on to the quarterfinals with a straight-set win over Roberto Bautista Agut. And today, on the courts, Taylor Fritz, the 13th-seeded American, taking on 4th-seed Alexander Zverev, 4-4 tie in the first set at last check. Alex De Minaur has a 2-1 lead and 4-2 lead in the fourth set against Arthur Fils from France. And also Lorenzo Musetti, the Italian, a 4-set win to move on to the quarters. And Novak Djokovic, the 2-seed, will take on Holger Rune, the 15-seed, here this morning at Wimbledon. So that's an update on Grand Slam tennis with Wimbledon here today. All right, I think we've covered everything. Shorter sports tickets here during the summer because there's not quite as much going on, but still a lot of activity. And I never thought that I'd be talking WNBA on the sports ticket as much as I have here in the 2024 season. But that's what's happened. A lot of people are interested in it right now. And I'm following what I'm seeing on social media because people are talking about it on social for sure. All right, that'll do it for today. Stay tuned. Another show for you tomorrow on Waterside Wake Up. And until then, we'll talk to you again. This is Dusty Donis.